In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my very own dungeon crawler, my donut hole himself, my part of the princess posse, the one, the only.
New achievement!
You've unlocked the Comic Exposure Podcast.
Travis Ratz here.
Lovely, lovely impression. I'm a big fan. Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis Ratz and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades, and you, my friends, are on one of those episodes. This is a comic book club episode, fresh out of our summer event, the first book after our graphic novel summer. We decided to go with a giant hit sensation across the land. Travis Ratz, today we are talking the comic book adaptation of Dungeon Crawler Carl. We read volume one. This is originally by Matt Dinneman, but we've got some art and all that good stuff on this one. Let's see. It's an Atheon production. Matt Dinneman is the creator, but Tevaga is the writer. Laurel Pursuit did some colors, some letters, some line art, some background art, all sorts of stuff. So we got some artists, we got some writers, we got a vault comic presentation of Dungeon Crawler Carl, Volume 1. Travis.
Excellent. I think before we start,
yeah, I was going to say, start us
question
off
in here, I think we need to start off with saying that, hey, we have read various levels, various volumes of the book, you and I. And for this podcast, we're not going to spoil anything plot-wise that happens in the Dungeon Crawler Carl saga outside this first volume of comic books.
That's right. We're going to try to
talk about it very generally.
On this first volume of comics, and we'll try to be general past that. I have gotten through all of them, so I have listened to. I haven't read any of them. Done all of the audiobooks, which I think are fantastic. Great voice acting, great voice work on them. Travis, you made it through book four or book three?
I'm on book five, right? With reading this comic, I started to crack into book number five. Two and listened, and this will be my third one I'm listening to.
All right. So I have not read any of them, just listened to them, but I'm not going to debate. I believe I've read the first. Is it seven? Did we just finish book seven? I don't remember.
Yeah, well, I think we can talk about I think one of the things we're going to talk about today is the fact that now it's going to be a Peacock TV show. So this is a story. Yeah. I told my students, because I recommend this, I've been recommending this to students, specific students who I think would dig this, for a couple of years now. And I always tell them, I'm like, hey, if you want to get on this train before it becomes the next Walking Dead, like, now's the time to do it. It might be a little bit too late because it's on here, but I think it's about to move outside reader circles and internet circles into the public zeitgeist. So we're here today using our platform of comics to shoehorn the comic of Dungeon Crawler Carl Volume 1 in order to talk about something that we love, which is the Dungeon Crawler Carl story. Is that correct, Josh?
When I saw that they put it into a graphic novel or into a comic book form through Vault, I was like, oh, this would be a good one to do, because I know you'd read some books, I'd listened to the books, and I thought this might be a good discussion about adaptation. This might be a good discussion about, you know, choosing how to put your book out there, how to visually represent your book, because I think this is an interesting choice. We'll get to the art style on here. But you're right. It has become this big thing. So my wife has a friend from high school. She's a pharmacist. She is the last person I would suspect to love Dungeon Crawler Carl, but she has listened to all of them, thinks they are the greatest thing, and has tried to get my wife like, no, you've got to listen to it. I know, Gabby. I know that this is not her thing. Like, I know that. But her friend, who is not like a comic book nerd or a D&D nerd or anything like that, is super into it. So she tried to get Gabby into it. Gabby listened to the first I think she made it into the third book and she's like, I can't do it anymore.
Oh, she made it that far. Yeah. So here's the thing. I get the, and now we're just talking, you and I,
yeah,
is because Gabby is a huge cat person.
Yes. That's the thought that like, because of Princess Donut, she would really get into this. But Gabby was like, I can't get past the sort of like non-story parts of the story. The parts that I think are fun and quirky because I played, you know, board games and Dungeons and Dragons and stuff as a kid. I like video games. So all the video gamey stuff I think is good. And then also I grew up reading a lot of fantasy. So like, and sci-fi. So you combine that all together. And this saga is just a giant dopamine hit back to back to back to back, right? Like that's what this kind of provides, is that silly gaminess, the weird kind of like, why can't I think of the famous Hitchhiker's Guide to this sort of humor of
Ready Player One, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, all of that stuff is kind of wrapped up into this. And I will say that I think that the books get much better and the story gets much better as the series goes on. But let's talk about this comic adaptation. I picked it up. It is 304 pages. And I was like, I wonder how far they get in to book one. I thought, Travis, they would get a whole lot farther into book one.
Yeah, the answer is not far.
Not far at all. And I was really surprised at how unfar it got.
What do you think that is? What do you think it is about? I'm going to do this real quick. So Dungeon Crawler Carl is a story that follows Carl and his ex-girlfriend's cat, Princess Donut, as they navigate a game show style world dungeon that aliens have taken over the Earth, and they've turned the Earth into a game show in which all inhabitants who choose must have to move through levels the way you would a video game.
Survive or die.
Get to the 18th level of this video game, survive or die, as Joss says. So that's about as general as we're going to get.
Yeah, it's like, we just think of it like Running Man, right? It's like the idea of like Running Man and Hunger Games and all of Running those sort of, those media. Travis, did you ever play the video game Smash TV?
Yeah, I still have it on a cartridge somewhere in this house.
It's very Smash TV, right? That idea of like, here's the game show, we put in it. There was like an indie movie called Contenders Series 7 that kind of is this idea, but this amps it up and puts this sort of sci-fi fantasy goblins and, you know, AI computers and crams it all into one package, into this Dungeons and Dragons style video game package.
And they're pretty thick books and pretty quick reads and pretty long audiobooks, like 20 hours plus for most of the audiobooks, sometimes 25, 26 hours. So what you had first mentioned was you said this adaption you thought was going to go farther along in the first story than it did, because the comic is like 300. I read it digitally. It's like 300. Yeah. You know, pages digitally. What do you think that is? Because it felt like we were like dialogue for dialogue from the book, scene for scene in the book. It's been a while since I read the first book. I don't think they added really anything new.
No.
So what do you think that is?
I think there's this, you're adapting it. And so you have some choices to make. You think about, when you adapt something to film, you adapt a novel to film, you have to really cut a lot of stuff and truncate things in order to make the story fit into 2 hours or whatever it is. You think about like the Hobbit is one book that they somehow turned into three movies so that they could get all of it into it. But people normally don't get that amount of money to turn a book into a movie. So you cut a lot of stuff or you truncate stuff. It feels that they're not truncating a lot, but Travis, I felt reading this and I was like, I think this works because I've read the book. Does that make sense?
Right.
There's some holes that don't get filled in because you're looking at it, like when Carl sees the screen pop up in front of him, like his UI pops up. In the story, it explains it a little better. In the comic book, it's just kind of there. And you're like, what is that? Right? And so there's some things that get lost because if you haven't read it, the comments and the snide, whatever, I think fall away a little bit in this, but it is still, I still think it does the work justice, right? But it just felt, I was just like, wow, 300 pages and we only got this far. It felt a little
short. That's a good point. You really put your finger on something that I felt, but I couldn't articulate, is that you're right. Now that I think back on it, I was filling in a lot of gaps just because things I knew. And I, you know, currently picked up the latest book, so the rhythms of the storytelling were in my head. And so I was like, so with that being said, I think this kind of falls into a unique piece where it is an adaption. We have to say that for sure. But it really is just more of a companion piece for people who have read the books already, I feel like if you're trying to enter the world of Dungeon Crawler Carl through this comic book, it's going to fall much more flat than it would the Dungeon Crawler Carl experience, either an audiobook or audiobook. I'm going to go ahead and say is probably the best way to absorb this story right now, but audiobook or that. So it becomes like the way that in like the 80s, it'd be like Roger Rabbit comic book edition, you know, Indiana Jones, where it's like, of course, you're not going to be able to tell all of Raiders in the Lost Ark in, you know, the 40 pages of the comic book adaption. But readers who love it are just like, I just want to get my hands on more stuff. I mean, Star Wars did this all throughout the 80s and 90s before the prequels came out, where it was just like, I love it. I want that story in different forms. Put it on the back of a cereal box and I'll buy that story, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like this is an adaption, yes, but more of a companion piece adaption and more of a almost like a collectible for Dungeon Crawler Carl fans than it is something that stands on its own as a vision of the story.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part, because you and I, having read it, we know, oh, yeah, no, he gets a map with this stuff on it. Oh, yeah. The things are flat. Like, it feels like they're not explaining some of the stuff that it gets explained in the book. Right. So it I think it probably works because I had read the book before. I was going to have Gabby join us on the show, but we kind of recorded quick because she just listened to the books. But after I read through it, I was like, yeah, I don't know that it's going to be her cup of tea to sit in it more. But I want to ask a little bit about what makes a piece of media like this, whether it's the comic book, the book, the audio book. What do you think makes Dungeon Crawler Carl this thing that has grabbed the zeitgeist, right? Why is it this thing that you were talking to students about? Why have I, any friend I have who's kind of a sci-fi or fantasy nerd, or is one of my Dungeons and Dragons friends, like, you should check this out. Like, it's been something that you point people to. Why do you think, why do you think it's spread like that?
I mean, for several reasons. I mean, you point out a couple of demographics there. You know, you're talking about your friends, you know, so you're talking like early millennials or Gen Z, or Gen X. But this really is, it brings in a lot of the elements of communication, like modern communication, whether it be through chat boards, social media, video games. It really kind of encapsulates the like new ways that people communicate, tell stories, share things about themselves, but then puts a nice candy coating shell of pop culture and fantasy around that form of communication. So that people are like, you know, Donut loves social media and they connect to their
and the Gilmore
boards.
Girls.
the Gilmore Girls. Still haven't seen that one. I'm sure like during the next outbreak, I'll sit down and watch, I don't know, was there 15 seasons of Gilmore Girls or something? Maybe we'll do a different podcast. Stay tuned for that, people. So I think it's and it's not the first to do that, but it's the, I think I think it's, it doesn't take itself too seriously. Like sometimes like something like Ready Player One takes itself a little too seriously. And Dungeon Crawler Carl feels like, you've said this before, you've used this analogy before, it's like taking all your toys and dumping them out and onto the floor and playing with them. This is almost like taking modes of storytelling and storytelling devices, like Gen Z storytelling devices or millennial storytelling devices, dumping those all out onto your desk and then using them as you're typing up your story. So it's less about figures playing with each other in this world, like we would say, oh, it's like Marvel versus DC, but more about storytelling devices. And pulling from video games and pulling from Dungeons and Dragons RPG games, and then using those devices to, it's like throwing a line in the water. You got lots of hooks on it. You're going to hook someone. So if you're not into the video game stuff, you might be into the fantasy stuff. If you're not into the violence, you might be into the humor.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it does hit all of those things. One, it's funny. There is some, you know, crassness to it. So if that's sort of your like offbeat humor that you're looking for, if it's the fantasy part you're looking for, if it's the video game part you're looking for, it just kind of hit all those things. I think of myself, right? Like I'm in my 40s. I was a kid who grew up playing like old Final Fantasy games and like video games and, you know, played Hero Quest, like Dungeons and Dragons light with my friends when I was a kid. I you know, grew up playing role-playing games online. My friends and I would run around the woods with like wooden swords and pretend we were, you know, Link, and we were playing in Zelda, you know, like Legend of Zelda stuff. So I have all that as a kid. And then I'm a fantasy reader, a sci-fi reader. So this hits all those things. And growing up and sort of, you think of like that sort of Simpsons, to Family Guy to Adult Swim humor, that's all in here as well. I feel like Matt Dinneman is in that same sort of age realm that we grew up with, all the same spices. And instead of just focusing in on one dish, right, he's made this sort of like this gumbo, right? This amalgamation of everything, right? Like he's just dumped it all in and said, yeah, this is what we're having for dinner, right? I'm not making this. I'm not making that. I made a pizza. I made the Mexican pizza of books, right? Like this is Taco Bell. This is Taco Bell in book form. And it's just what it is, right? It's like junk food book. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. But it's like all those things. It's snappy, it's witty, it's uncouth, and it helps pull you along in the story. I want to ask you, Travis, as someone who's not a, like, you played video games as a kid, but you don't play, it's not like you're playing video games now. I don't think you've ever played Dungeons and Dragons.
No, we tried with you one time. We had like one of those off-brand games. That was my first experience with it.
Yeah. So I want to ask you, like, what is it about this story that pulled you in? What's the thing about Dungeon?
Oh, perfect. Because I think you hit on it too. And I don't know if I even realized that, but maybe this is one of the things that put me in. You talked about when you were a kid and you'd play in these kind of fantasy worlds with your friends. That was my thing as a kid. No Legos, no cars. It was like, if you had like an empty Christmas wrapping roll, that's a sword, whatever it is. And in this comic, the visual aspect of this comic is you can see Dinneman does a good job describing all those things, but here you can visualize it. And in the story in general, it's like when you level up, like at one point in this comic, you know, Carl's got his boxers on, he's got knee pads with spikes on them. He's got like a poker in his hand, you know, he's got gloves on there. And to me, I'm like, oh, that looks like me as like 6 years old, putting on random stuff in the house, in my boxers, like armoring up. I've got like my dad's bicycle gloves on, my sister's volleyball knee pads on, and like in my head, in my imagination, I'm cool, you know, like this sense of working with what you got. And there's an element of unboxing in this story that, you know, there's all these unboxing videos online and YouTube that seems to some psychological way be pulling people in. Like my nephew is obsessed with kind of unboxing stuff.
Yeah.
And it scratches that itch. So Dinneman with the story that we see in this comic is just able to like, there's so many like little itches he's scratching on there. Yeah. So many entry points for a reader to get involved with the book.
Right. And it feels like Dinneman probably played a lot of World of Warcraft or some Diablo or EverQuest or modernly my son who played a lot of like Fortnite, right? The loot box. Mm. I found the treasure chest. You know, that's wow. You go out on these, you know, you go out in the raids in World of Warcraft to go with a bunch of friends and defeat something. And what did you get? Oh, I got the helm of whatever. I got the sword of yada, 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 right? I wonder if the guys from Adventure Zone, the McElroy brothers, did we read the Adventure Zone volume one on
yes.
this? I believe we did. So it was their Actual Play podcast. And Actual Play podcasts have become really big on podcasts and on YouTube and stuff like that. You think of all of those guys who just play Dungeons and Dragons, those folks who go ahead and do that, the ladies and gentlemen who kind of set up those games and play through them and, you know, riff to make their way through this story. I wonder, Dinneman probably owes a lot of the success of this book on the shoulders of that group of people who've been doing Actual Play podcasts for years and years and years and years, so that people who don't play Dungeons and Dragons, but listen to people play Dungeons and Dragons or watch people play Dungeons and Dragons or other fantasy games now can read a version of it that, as a story creator, Dinneman doesn't have to worry about what role is made or who rolls what, like they do on those Actual Play podcasts. He gets to determine what the outcome is and doesn't have to off the cuff it. He can create the perfect story based
on Dungeon Master.
He wants. Yeah. He's the Dungeon Master and the player all in the same time.
Yeah, this one he doesn't have to hide the devices, right? It's just like, oh
right.
Yeah. You roll a 7. Now you've lost all your mana or whatever it is.
I think there's something about that I wonder if, like, as a culture, this group of, you know, I think that I listen to some Actual Play podcasts. I listen to the Adventure Zone. I listen to a couple others throughout, you know, the last decade or so. And I think that's really kind of set the stage for a book like Dungeon Crawler Carl to kind of take over.
Do you think
and be this cultural phenomenon?
And this might be getting a little too heavy, but the sense that, you know, this kind of stuff is becoming more and more popular. Dungeon Dragons coming back with the podcast you talked about, this book, all this culture is kind of saturated with this kind of role-playing storytelling.
Is it because the world's so terrible that we need to escape? Yes, Travis, that is why.
Well, I think is it because we're just so disconnected that anything where it's like even stories about people like strangers connecting for a shared common goal and mm-hmm. completing tasks and quests, you know, before, you know, when that thing was automated, like you had to work with people all the time. You had to go out and do things. You had to interact with people and there were these daily quests like, hey, we have, you know, I got to move. I got to get 6 people to help me. Now you can just call, you know, there's an app for that, I'm sure, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you think it is some sort of subconscious allure of working with people to accomplish goals and tasks that may be driving people, especially younger people, to be involved in and be engaged with these dungeon lit RPG type stories?
I think it originates from the fact that people want to see people connecting. And so I think Dungeons and Dragons and those sorts of games and role-playing games like that force people to work together and talk together and build story together. And I think we are a culture that craves storytelling.
Yeah.
So there's something authentic about people sitting around and telling the story together for the first time and making it in front of you. There's something I think alluring about that. And so I think a book like Dungeon Crawler Carl taps in to that idea of the fantasy of the role-playing game. And I mean, remember the original, that Dungeons and Dragons cartoon when we were kids, where the kids get sucked into the board game, right? Jumanji. This is just the next iteration of
comic exposure pitch clubs.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't want to leave the comic book behind. Right. So we spent like 24 minutes here and we haven't really talked about this book.
And I think I know why. We talked about like this, you know, I made the point that this feels like more of a companion piece for a collector, another way to kind of visualize the story on here. But I think, and I'm going to speak for you a little bit, and we're going to kind of just pull this rug from underneath it and say that for both of us, manga isn't a natural kind of artistic style that we gravitate to.
Are you correct?
That we don't, we haven't read and liked manga. We've done very few on this podcast, but usually if we're reading manga, we have to first kind of, you have to be absorbed enough in the story where I'm not coming in with just the art kind of throws me a little bit. Yeah. So we decided to do this adaption. We knew it was manga. And we neither of us talked about it. We're like, hey, we're gonna go into this.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, Josh, knowing now that we both have, it's not a bias against manga, but it's not, the style isn't our favorite. As unbiasedly as you can, what do you think about the choice to do this adaptation in a manga style?
Look, if the idea is to hit another demographic of people, right? So if I don't know, so I think of the kind of group below us, right? So my daughter, the generation below us, and my son, who they have grown up in a world of manga and anime, right? That if you want to hit them with this story, this is the way to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think from a standpoint of what's the way to do it, I also would tell you, I think had this really been a black and white manga sized, you know, book that you're going to churn them out quick in that style, perfect idea. I would probably collect them, right? I would probably go, okay, this is my One Piece. This is my, you know, Naruto. This is the thing that I'm going to have. Although I'm not a manga person, I would want to kind of experience the story in a new way. I think the thing that I wish that this did is I wish it went all the way, right? It's very close, right? But I kind of wish it had leaned in. And I almost wish like I would have bought it, had it in paperback, had it be black and white, and got into it, and let it really do that. But it is, I mean, even the sound effects look like sound effects from manga, right? Even the even the writing is all very, it all looks very manga. And I think you do it color because it's fantastical, but
yeah.
I think I would have enjoyed it maybe a little more had it leaned in and just gone full manga.
Yeah, I think that's great. Actually, that would have changed the whole perspective on this because I could see one novel of Dungeon Crawler Carl being like 24 manga books.
Yeah.
Right?
Or like
getting every detail.
Right? Whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a Saiyan saga, like the way they did like Dragon Ball on here.
Yeah.
Now, when I got to the back of this when I was reading it last night, it says, this collects the first 13 chapters of the hit Webtoon series. Now I'm familiar with what Webtoons are. So do you think this was all done? It feels digital in its art design, even though the style is manga. Do you think this was all online and then they just took them off and just printed them on there?
That's what I would think to me. My guess is that
it feels like it.
Yeah, and I'm also curious, like, I didn't, you know, look, I'm not doing a bunch of, maybe had we done a little more research on this, we would have seen, early on, Matt Dinneman had a, you know, met with someone and started creating a web series about, a comic about this, right? And so it was early on before it became this giant thing. And so now you're kind of left with, this is my visual version of it. Let's put it out. Let's hit the,
sure,
the,
yeah, the mass that's market. That's an excellent point, though.
Because
yeah.
it's already done, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious about that. I'd be interested in that more. But I think
the IP wasn't as hot. Like now, if they were to buy this now and put it in a comic book form, I think it'd be like Image or, you know,
IDW. Yeah. Yeah.
And they would put some, they would either use to break a really strong talent or to put a strong talent on there, but they would give it some heat. They would give it the royal treatment based on how hot the IP is.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, when we think about, we've had Daniel Warren Johnson. Doing Transformers. Yeah. You know? And I think
Transformers and G.I. Yeah. Joe and all of those things. I think that's probably what this is, but I also understand and I think that if you're going to try to get this story into the next group of people's hands, manga is probably the way to do it. It probably is. You think about like, so now you've got Image, DC, and Marvel all putting out these manga-sized versions of their hits. Right. I had a buddy reach out to me who's like, man, what have you been reading? Like, I know you do the comic book podcast. I wanted to read some stuff. What's some stuff I should read? And I looked on my shelf. I'm like, I could send him some stuff. But you know what I did? I just ordered like three of those DC, those compact DCs and two Image ones. And just Amazoned them to him. I was like, dude, here,
yeah,
read these. These
are like $6 or something like that. Yeah.
They're like $6 to $10. So it was like the first volume of Why the Last Man, American Vampire. It was Batman, A Long Halloween, the Court of Owls saga. And what's the Image one that turned into the cartoon? It's super violent. Shoot. Invincible.
Oh,
the first volume of Invincible.
Yeah, Invincible.
Invincible. And I just
those are all bangers, man.
Yeah. And I was like, here, and just here's what's been good over the last 10 years.
Also, like, dude, you're my friend. Listen to the podcast and then read those books.
But it was like, here, just like, that's an easy way to do it. So I think if you're like, I also go like, I am, if I had this in paperback, I would probably go, hey, Renner, you might like this. Cause he like half listened to the book when I would pick him up and I was like, I could not listen to it. So I'd pick him up from gymnastics and it'd be playing on the way home. So he's heard bits and pieces, but he's heard his mom.
He's like, God damn it, don't it.
Yeah. And so part of me just wants to go, this might be the next way to hook that, the next demographic. So what do you, I mean, I think this does a good job of making its way through it. I do like one of the things I really liked, and you know, this is something I love when we show equipment in comic books.
Yeah.
When we show the equipment and we show you what the parts are. And I think that's part of why Dungeon Crawler Carl works is because it describes the loot he gets. And in this one, you also get the image of it. You get Princess Donut's tiara. You get the sort of like, pop up about, you know, the knee pads and the goblin dynamite and all of this stuff, the potions and one of the jokes about how many torches they get, and you get to see them in this. And so those are all kind of like funny ways to bring the next stuff, like her getting the magic missile like book so that now she can shoot off magic missiles. All of those things, that was fun to see.
For me, yeah, I agree. I like the, you know, because that's what it should feel like, a video game. I like the, for me, the character visually that worked was Princess Donut in manga form.
Oh,
I don't think Carl worked as much for me. I didn't feel like it. Some of the monsters were okay, but I think Princess Donut shined in this manga illustration. Because it really emphasized her cuteness and her expressions. And I love when they do the swatty lines of her hand when she's like swatting something away. And it's just that manga kind of swat lines on there. So for me, it really made me fall in love with that character I was already in love with even more is Princess Donut because I have that kind of cute kawaii visual of her in this manga form on there. And they would do a couple of like visual bits every now and then, almost like that you didn't get in the book, where it'd be like, oh, here is a metaphor I'm using, and then they'll do a panel which kind of explores that metaphor. They did it a few times, but I wish they did it more, because Dinneman writes a lot of like, oh, it's like Murphy Brown had a baby with the RoboCop, you know, the book. This is not a real line from the book, but an example of that. And then the comics, sometimes they would take some of those and they would show you like a little panel what that would look like. And I wish they kind of did that more, because every time I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's a cool new addition.
That's a clever way to show that. There's the one where he kills the goblin and they're like, he probably had a family, you jerk. And it's like the family sitting by the grave, and it's like goblin killed by Crawler Carl, right?
Exactly. That's great.
Those are funny little images in there. I think you're right. I think the thing that didn't work for me, you talked about the kind of monster design. I didn't really like the goblins all that much. I didn't like the hoarder. I didn't think that didn't work for me. And I can't explain why. In my head, it was grosser in the book, listening to it.
It's grungier. Right? Yeah. Grungier, sloppier. Yeah.
And this felt less grungy and less sloppy. But I think it did.
It's all sleek and polished in this coloring and digital style and manga style. Yeah. Everything just becomes very streamlined, and Dungeon Crawl Carl feels like you're cooking on the fly. And sometimes it feels like maybe the art should kind of feel like that too. I think your solution of doing a black and white pencil, like inked manga, is the best way to endear people to the book, get it out to the masses, get younger people reading in it, and also still make it feel like it has some authentic, like, I don't want to say artistic merit, because I don't want to crap on the art on here, but less canned, less, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I think it just comes down to like, is this the... This is a version of it. And I'm curious how many other, will we get another version of this, right? Like, how much of the IP when Dinneman let this group make this, is this the only version of comic book that can come out of this? Or are there other versions of it that can come out? Is Vault...
That's a good question.
Is Vault capitalizing on this? Because this thing is, it's going to be a live action TV show. And I don't know how they're going to do that. To me, I think this is a thing you go like, oh no, it's a cartoon. This is that Adult Swim cartoon of it. But I think you want to capitalize on it. So, okay, we make it a,
they're going to throw all the money at it.
Yeah.
I mean, the first season with the way it's set in the world that it's set in.
Yeah.
I mean, at least it's like pretty self-contained, like interior sets.
Yeah. You're not doing anything wild. Yeah. You're not doing giant.
But once you get past that first world, it's going to get more pricey. But I guess so, to see if it works and if it's worth it. Kind of the way Stranger Things was very small, kind of smaller budget, and then became this huge Game of Thrones style budget.
My question for you is, do you think... this is becoming this juggernaut piece of media. Do you think the TV show is going to land? Do you think it's going to work?
As I
think just based on sheer amount of people who've read it, people will probably check it out. But whether it works beyond, I watched the first episode, I didn't stream at all, right? Like, I wonder, like, what's the cap on this? Or I guess in the world of digital television, do you need it to be a giant hit? Or do you need it just to drive some people to sign up for Peacock or to sign up for, you know what I mean?
I think my answer to this, would I have to do some research on who are the creative talents, who's the showrunner on it?
No, I think it's Seth MacFarlane. I thought it was... Maybe I'm.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of, I mean, if you look at his track record, other than Family Guy, he's done a lot of kind of like, what's the Star Trek one he did and stuff like that. So kind of like middling, like he's got a, but if you take his, I don't know, it could be interesting. I it's a great question for this property, because it's still so new and so growing. Like, I want the best for it. Matt Dinneman deserves all his flowers and all the monies. He's an Arizona guy too, I believe. And so I want to be a success, because even though there is that 12-year-old in me who's like, no more people read this book, right? You were introduced it to me, and I was like, all right, let me close the gate behind me. But you know, I want people to whatever it takes to invest yourself in the story. So I hope for the best, and I will be following it. I'm curious how the casting is going to go. I know the guy who does the audiobooks has already been cast to do the voice of Donut.
Jeff Hayes is I would tell you, the reason I love this, I don't know if I could read it in novel form, but Jeff Hayes and his voice work are just fantastic. I think if I read it, there's probably things I would skip. I'd be like, all right, yep. Okay, you're telling me what this thing is. But I think his voice for the AI and his like Donut is just, he sells it so well. The audiobook is fantastic. I thought it was a blast. I really enjoyed it. It only gets better. His voice acting and the way that they've decided to start telling the story only gets better as the audiobooks go on. The first one, because Gabby was re-listening to it, and I hadn't listened to the first one in a long time, and then I was like, oh, I forgot he did it like that in the first one. Right. And then you can see him change how he does it over the books. But I really enjoyed it. I think reading this volume made me remember why I really liked the book, the initial one. I don't know that I loved the style of it. I think that it does work better as an addition to Dungeon Crawler Carl. I don't know if it works well as your replacement for the audiobook. But I guess if you're selling this as a piece of intellectual property and you're trying to get your story to more people, this is an audience for that, right?
Here's my recommendation on how to use it if you're going to use these, because I think there is a couple of volumes of this comic book. Is for me, I read and listened to like the first four books. Like boom, 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 boom. It was the only thing. I mean, it becomes all consuming, right? Whether you're reading or listening to it, it takes up a lot of time. And then like anything that I rush into, I got a little bit burnt out on it. And I'm like, take a break. So I took a break for a long time. And I try to get into book four. I'm like, God, what happened? There's so much that happened. So many characters I don't know. I think these comics would be a great way to do a quick refresh if you took a break from the series for a while. Is pick up the previous comic book. It follows the broad strokes of it. So that might be a way to also think about how to use these comic books if they're not like their own, like, wow, the comic book is the best form of the story, but more like, oh, comic book's a great way to recap something. On there is how I would use it. But also this whole conversation, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about this book and the story. We did mention the comic and talked about our things in the comic, but we read books, Josh. We don't just read comic books. And especially in the summertime, I'm cranking out novels, like fiction novels on here. Yeah. And I know you always got a novel or two working at the same time here. And I like talking novels with you. When we meet up in the summertime, we're always like, okay, what are you reading? And we're usually not talking about comic books. We're usually not asking each other what comic books
we're
reading.
Because we talk about comic books every weekend, Travis.
So we're talking about like, oh, check out this book, or this book was really cool. I mean, that's how I found out about Dungeon Crawler Carl, you talking about this book. So I don't know, man. Should we break format here and do an ep where we go over some summer reads?
I think you're right. I think here's what we're going to do. We haven't done a variant episode in a while, Travis Ratt. So we're going to throw, I mean, I guess we just did one because we did a wrap up of all of our summer books. But Travis and I, we wanted to talk about some non-comic books we've been reading. And so next episode, we're going to throw a bonus variant episode at you where we talk about the novels we've been reading. This is a great novel series, Dungeon Crawler Carl. So let's talk about some other books. Maybe they'll become hit graphic novels. Maybe they'll become the next big thing, Travis Ratz. Who knows?
Yeah. And if we get the more listeners on the episode that we ever have, then we'll just change it from a comic book podcast to a novel podcast.
It'll be a novel podcast. Easy peasy. Yeah, this is what happened. So, folks, here's what we've got. August comic book or August comic book club. We've got this Dungeon Crawler Car episode you're listening to right now. So you made it. You're with us. We've got a little variant episode coming up where we're talking about the novels we've read, books we've read this year over the summer, things like that. And then we've got Out of Alcatraz is the other book for August comic book club. We've got two books for August coming at you. Out of Alcatraz is by Christopher Cantwell with art by Tyler Crook. I love Tyler Crook. Fantastic artist. I'm excited to talk about this book. I think it's a little different book for you and I think it's not quite a crime book, but I think it'll take us out of what this is. If Dungeon Crawler Carl and talking about it more as a property than a comic book, and it breaks the mold out of our graphic novel discussion we've been having, I think we're going to be able to get into an interesting comic as we talk about Out of Alcatraz. Nice. I'm excited to talk about that one. And then when we come at you for our novel read next time, we will share with you our books coming up for fall. So we'll get you our list of books for September and maybe the October spooky books. We'll have at least a partial list coming up for those October spooky books. So folks, thanks for tuning in. Remember, you can find us on the internet at comicexposure.com. We're on Instagram at Comic Exposure. You can see what's coming up. You can see some clips from the show. You can see what books we are going to be reading or when episodes come out. You can also find yourself some merch at comicexposure.threadless.com. We've got t-shirts, lots of cool stuff to check out. I think that's it, Travis Ratz. Is that all we got?
That's all for me.
That's all. All right, folks.
I don't know why I do this with my hands. So, Josh, ask me that again.
Travis Wright,
that's all for me. That's all for me. What am I doing? Like, this is like,
I don't know.
When we start talking about books, I become like reading LeVar Burton all of a sudden. I'm like, yeah. And that's it for me.
Take a look. It's in a book. We'll see you next trade.